Hello and welcome to The Loudspeaker, your definitive guide on how to scale your startup.
This first tip for every fintech startup is,
what are the media and press saying about us? How are we being perceived by these people?
PR stunts are any activities that allow you to engage with the audience.
I don't agree with the fact that all publicity is good publicity.
Here is where we talk to communications professionals from all around the world to let you know what are the best practices and cool ideas that you can implement for your startups. Well, let's get started, Alex. Can you tell our listeners who you are, your experience in PR, and a little bit about your podcast, PR After Hours?
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm Alex Greenwood, and for the past 27 years, I've worked in public relations. I started my career in journalism, but my first job in public relations was at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, United States. That was around 1995, and I was a junior associate in PR for the medical school there. And that was the campus that had the full medical school, and it also had three hospitals on it. Well, a lot of listeners probably don't know this, or especially if you're younger, but this was 1995. A lot of you weren't even born yet, I bet. Unfortunately, on April 19th, 1995, a domestic terrorist backed a U-Haul truck, or was it a Ryder truck? It was a rented truck up to a federal building and exploded it, killing nearly 200 people, including children. Our three hospitals at our site, as you can imagine, were a mile away, were overwhelmed with patients and the dead, unfortunately, and the injured. Well, that was my first crisis. And as you can imagine, that being at the time, the worst terrorist attack on American soil in history, it began not a day, not a week, not a month, but a full year of 16-hour days at minimum, and of just constantly being in fight or flight crisis mode, because you went from the week of the attack when everybody's in a state of shock and you've got your hospitals are overwhelmed, the world media descends on you. But here's the thing, the world's media does not stop descending on you after a week. It's not like today where it's like the news cycle just turns over in a day or less, an hour at times. Back then it was like this was the story. So we started receiving guests at the hospital, like Oprah Winfrey or the Duchess, Fergie. She came a couple of times, and we had lots of celebrities who wanted to come and help and just, you know, meet the injured and the families and that kind of stuff. So we had to deal with that aspect of it, but we had to deal with the media, obviously. So there's all of this stuff. And I tell that quick little nugget for you, because that is exactly where I cut my teeth on crisis communication. And that's been 1995, 25 years ago. And then, of course, you had every anniversary for a while where that kept going. All right. Well, throughout my career, then after that, I bounced around to different jobs in PR and marketing. And long story short, I worked in higher education. I was right arm to college presidents. I was in healthcare. I was in a variety of different sectors as a PR person, basically, until about, well, it'll be 11 years in January 2021, I opened my own shop, AGPR. AGPR is a full service public relations consulting firm that specializes in crisis communication planning. How's that? Was that okay?
Yeah, no, I think that was great. And it's so nice to have such like a detailed story and an interesting story as well behind your backstory. I have to say, I'm super excited for this, because for me, before I ever got into PR, the only thing I knew about PR and the only time I ever thought about it is when a crisis happens. So that is always something that's on my mind whenever I think PR. That's my first association with it, like a company or a business scrambling to regain their image. And now that I work in PR, I understand like holistically a lot more about like what it contains. But initially, yeah, that was my first kind of like introduction or first like thought of it. And you're on the show today to discuss crisis communication planning. Would you be able to start by giving some examples of the most devastating crises that a business can face?
Yeah, there are so many. There's two types of crises, by the way. There's an oppositional crisis where you have done something wrong as a company. Let's say BP oil disaster, the Deep Horizon in the Gulf of Mexico. That's an oppositional crisis because people are PO'd at you as a company because you did some through your negligence or for wrongdoing. You did something wrong. Then you have the non-oppositional crisis, like in 1982 with the Johnson & Johnson cyanide-laced Tylenol capsules, which is a classic. Like, if you're a PR person, that's like the one you learn about in school, about how to handle it well, you know, where somebody laced cyanide capsules or laced cyanide into Tylenol, which are headache capsules. If you're an international person, it's a, you know, headache tablets. But they did that in poison kill, I think, 7 or 8 people. And the thing was that the company, though, did such a great job responding to it that it became the gold standard of how to respond to a crisis. But so that would be a non-oppositional crisis. And the reason why is because the company's going, gosh, this isn't our fault. This is an act of terror. This is somebody using our product to hurt people. And therefore, and they handled it in such a way where the public was not in opposition to them. So they were a non-oppositional crisis. So those are the two types. But right now there are so many that things that people don't think about. And I'll just tick off some just like bullet points here of type of crises I've dealt with. How about I just talk about the ones I've dealt with in the past couple of years?
Go for it.
Yeah. I don't give out names, obviously, of companies I work with. I sign a non-disclosure agreement with most of them. And also I think a lot of them, even if they're doing the right thing, just don't really need it out there that they hired a crisis person. So I just want to be clear about that. But let's just say that I have dealt with a company that was in multi-million dollar. They were in a middle of a big merger. And I'm talking about not 5 million, 10 million, like $100 million merger. And long story short, the person or the organization they were trying to merge with had some legal issues they didn't disclose, and it blew up. And then it became they were suing each other. I ended up getting deposed in this thing, which was awful because I had initially worked to help the merger go through as the PR person and kind of hold hands and get everybody through that. And then when that blew up later, I was trying to take the side of my employer, and it just got really awful. So you've got situations like that. I've had situations where young people, perhaps in college, who are on their way to perhaps the National Basketball Association, when they graduate, as long as they can stay on the straight and narrow, have done some questionable things, and we needed to address that. I just recently, in our bad situation we're in right now with global pandemic, that's redundant. A pandemic is, by very meaning, global. But anyway, sorry about that. I'm a stickler for language. Usually I'm a stickler for language. But then there's situations where I've run into several times. The United States is also, besides COVID, awash in some very serious civil unrest, racial strife, those kinds of things. I have had 3 calls and worked with at least 2 of the 3 on people getting on social media and saying, at best, racially insensitive things that people caught, people screenshot, and backlash against them. We're going to ruin your business type things. And I've had to help people get through those things, you know. So those are some situations right there. Other crises are really simple things like employees, you know, like, again, with social media, which is the new, you know, vector for crisis to occur. You have employees who say stupid stuff about the company, you know, and there's a couple of examples I can give you of, you know, classically good and bad reactions to that. But I've dealt with that kind of stuff a lot, Sam. It's amazing the types of human behavior. And then it's also amazing that particularly with social media, the people who want a pound of flesh out of everybody for every mistake. So it's a rich field for us, Sam. I don't mean that in a funny way, but it's a very rich field of opportunities for PR people who know what they're doing to not only try to fix situations in what I call an active crisis, but to go in like we like to do and help them plan ahead and mitigate the damage.
Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. Real quick, I just want to know, like, what was the situation with the Tylenol? I'm not familiar with that. How did someone manage to do that? You said like it wasn't the company's fault. Like, was it an employee? Like, what happened with that situation? How did they actually get that in there?
Well, it's 1982. Tylenol at the time had capsules. Okay, like you could pull them apart. Like right nowadays, you only see capsules, and this is the reason why. You generally only see capsules that you can pull apart in prescription medicine, right? Now you see tablets and caplets and things like that, which I guess a caplet is a tablet and a cap. Anyway, capsule put together. So in 1982, I believe it was in Chicago. 7 people died. They were taking extra strength Tylenol capsules that were found to contain cyanide, which, you know, freaked everybody out. What happened was the person had bought the brands. Remember, there was no safety caps then. There was no, you know how you have the little plastic or thing that you didn't have that. I mean, they might have been childproof, but an adult can get in there. So what they did is they gently pulled apart the capsules and put cyanide in them, put them back together, and put it back on the shelf at the local drugstore. So they pulled 31 million bottles. That's like $100 million worth were pulled from the shelves nationwide, with production and advertising being completely stopped. And they worked in conjunction with the Chicago police and the FBI. They had a $100,000 reward to find the person who did that. Never found them. But this is, like I mentioned earlier, the post-crisis, they introduced a new tamper-resistant packaging, and they gave $2.50 off coupons and said, please come back to us. We've made it safer. Let us show you how. And it was just a total home run. Anybody like Sam, if you haven't heard of this one, this was like the gold standard. I recommend you check it out. Just Google Johnson & Johnson cyanide. You will find tons. In fact, when I teach webinars, or back in the day when I taught in person and gave speeches and stuff, I would show a video of this whole thing. It was just, and it's just fascinating how it went. So I recommend you check that one out.
That's awesome. No, that sounds like they've done a really good job there of recovering.
If you're interested in seeing how Publicize can grow your startup, sign up for a free PR assessment on our website. And for a limited time only, exclusively for the Loudspeaker listeners, you can receive an SEO assessment as part of your package for any tier of service at no extra charge with this special promotion. To find out more, visit publicize.co/lspromo.
If you were to choose your top kind of recovery, would that be one, or is there some other one that comes to mind? And then again, for the next question, what is the worst case? So best case scenario of like recovering from a crisis, and worst case where they've been obliterated as a result.
I mean, I got to tell you something. And I think if you even Google like best crisis calm response or something like that, the Tylenol one would just continue to come up. I mean, there's been some good examples more recently, but none of them that I find is compelling. And I guess, you know, we all kind of enjoy, I don't know if we enjoy, but it's that German word Schadenfreude, where we all kind of, there's a little bit of a, come on, there's a visceral reaction inside. You're like, oh, this is interesting. And that's why I do a talk, by the way. It's like, I do it every year, I add to it. But like when I started it, when I was, my business was 7 years old, and it was a little talk I offered. It's like 7 years in business and my 7 biggest mistakes. And people love that, because people want to hear how mistakes were made, because that's how you learn. You don't often learn as well from good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's why when your mom says, don't put your hand on a hot stove, and you do it, you remember that.
Yeah.
So I would just say that one's a good one. There's so many that are probably escaping me, I'm sorry, at the moment, that are really good, because that one just always drowns out all the little ones. But you can probably find lots of little ones where responses are good. But usually, I'll just tell you this, even if I don't have a specific example of someone else, is if you're forthright, if you're candid, and if you're quick to respond, you're usually going to, at the very least, mitigate the worst damage. It's the companies that dither and freeze up and black out everything and just let the world have their way with the truth that are going to get screwed over. I mean, you look at Deepwater Horizon, where they were pointing fingers at their contractors immediately, the BP folks were. You look at those kinds of situations where then it just looks like, you know, this pitiful giant of a company can't even tell us, you know, can't even own up to a mistake they made because they're so worried about legal exposure. Things like that happen. So, but I think there's some bad ones, though. And you know what? I think when we talk, you know what? I think we, I don't know about you, but in the United States, we've been on lockdown because of some really just poor pandemic management. So there's a lot of pizza being consumed here. So how about a couple of pizza examples? Would you like some pizza examples?
Yeah, go for it. I love pizza.
Terrible. All right. And listeners, if you're outside the U.S., I apologize. These are a little U.S.-centric, but there's a big PR nightmare with a chain called Papa John's a couple of years ago. Papa John's is a pizza chain throughout the United States. They are very big with the National Football League, or they were. Papa John is their CEO and founder, kind of a colorful character. Well, his name is John Schnatter, and he had to resign after using a racial slur. Sound familiar? During a conference call in the summer, he had already resigned as CEO after comments he had made about American football players kneeling in protest during the national anthem. He'd already just shot his mouth off there. Well, he did it. You know, he did it again on a conference call. People heard it and got out, or I think there might have been a recording. Well, so the response, though, you know, it's the trend of we should apologize. And I'm all for apologies as long as it's not an if apology. And I don't know if anybody knows what an if apology is. We're sorry if you were offended. Okay, that's not an apology. That's terrible. You might as well just not even apologize at all or make the pretense. Well, one approach that Papa John's came up for was an apology ad that they used on social media, right? And what they did, they kind of cleverly, and when I first started watching it, I was like, okay, we're good. They started screen grabbing and adding to the animation of people's comments on social, how I'm never going to delete in your app. I'm never going to eat your pizza again. You people are horrible, blah, blah, blah. And they went through this whole thing and basically they were showing all this, but the only problem was they weren't apologizing really. They just kept saying, you've made us better. You've made us think. You've made us this. But they never once really said, but you know what? We're sorry. This is awful. We made so many people feel terrible. They didn't do that. They just basically said, thanks for making us think. Well, you know, that to me, and this is maybe not a great example, but that to me is like you're on the playground when you're a kid and a bully comes over and gives you a bloody nose. And then, you know, the teacher catches him and the kid says to you, you really made me think about breaking your nose because I got blood on my hand and my shirt. I mean, you're not really apologizing. You're just saying, I understand what I did. So I think that was poor. And there was a lot of backlash and they really, really had some bad mojo from that. And I don't think that, and I think the NFL has pretty well severed their ties with them and it's not been good. So that's one pizza example. That's not so great. Here's one more. This is a quicker one. Sorry. I didn't mean to.
I enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, there was the in 2009. Let's go way back to 2009. Back in the day before when things were really starting to heat up with YouTube and stuff like that. Well, there was a chain called Domino's in the United States as well. That's mostly a delivery outfit. But this time they had a video that went viral pretty quickly, and it was 2009. Two of their employees, and I'm not going to get into everything they did, but they video themselves doing nasty stuff to the pizza while they're making it. And I mean, disgusting. And it was just, ugh. And well, it got out. And here's the thing though, Domino's made a good response. Only problem, they took like 2 days to do it. 2 days while the whole world talked about how disgusting their product was. And I think they've come back in the, you know, 10 years or whatever since, but I think it took a lot of the shine off the product, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it made me a lot less like, now you can go to, I worked fast food in high school. I didn't do it, but I've seen people do crap to their food. Okay. We all probably know that. We probably don't want to know anything about the people who make
it's a risk you take.
It's a risk you take. Yeah. You know what? As long as I don't know, fine. But this just put it front and center. So the problem, Sam, that I think brands should learn from this example though, is taking 2 days. I was on a Crisis Communication International Forum. It was supposed to be in New York City in March, but of course COVID. So they moved it online, and they had a guy who had been doing crisis for 25 or 30 years. And he got on there and he asked everybody virtually, you know, well, how long do you have to respond to a crisis situation before you lose the high ground? Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody said, you've got a couple hours, maybe, you know, that's what people said. And I was like, and I thought, yeah, I'd say an hour. He said, 15 minutes. You got 15 minutes to respond because social media is like that. If you're a major brand that has any kind of following at all, even if you're not, he says, if you're just a local brand, you got about 15 minutes to at least come up with a holding statement to hold people off so people don't jump to conclusions. And then you go from there. And that is why we get around to what I do the most, which is helping people plan so they have those holding statements ready. So they have those templated things ready to fire out while you get your bearings and you have a plan and you can activate it. And you're not doing the thing that a lot of people do because they don't have a plan. They go, who's in charge here? Well, you're the CEO. You go out and talk to people. Sometimes the CEO is the absolute worst person to go out and do an interview. See Deepwater Horizon. Just Google that one. I want my life back guy. Remember him? So,
no, I think that having a plan clearly is very necessary if you've got 15 minutes, because the truth is being able to react that quickly especially to a crisis when you have no idea what crisis it's going to be and it could catch you off guard, then it's going to require preparation to bounce back from that so quickly. And it's funny that you mentioned Domino's as well. And because on the point of the Papa John's, obviously I'm not in the US, I'm not American, but at the same time, I still keep up with the news more or less and try and see what's going on there. And I do remember hearing that following the issues with Papa John's, Domino's kind of like teased and trolled Papa John's as well. I think their PR response to that was really good as well. Yeah. So I suppose another person's crisis is, or a crisis is your opportunity or your competitor's opportunity to jump on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the fast food wars, as we call them, Wendy's is an incredibly good, Wendy's hamburgers, incredibly good at that. They can troll with the best of them. Yeah, that's the other thing too, that, you know what, Sam, I'm glad you brought that up. That's not even something I was thinking about, was not only are you dealing with the outraged public and the media wanting your hide for these things, but that your competitors are like, oh, I smell weakness, I'm going to come zing you. And, you know, I'd like to think if it was a, I would like to think they would only do that in the oppositional crisis. You know, if it was a non-oppositional, like if, for God forbid, somebody
was kicking them when they're down.
Yeah. And what if people died like from poisoned meat at McDonald's? By the way, folks, that's just an example. That did not happen. but if Wendy's kind of goes in there and starts zinging them, that's disrespectful to the people who were sickened or killed by it, you know, too. And that could rebound on them. But yeah, well, you know, if you're just kind of zinging them with like, really, you know, that kind of thing, I think that's fair game, and you'll see it. Be prepared, and you need to be prepared for it.
Cool. And so in some quick bullet points, quick summary, like, what would you say is it's my final question, what would you say are some points and advice for this? Obviously you mentioned a few things, like have a plan, be quick, and like respond, but if you were just to break it down into a quick elevator pitch of like, here's what you need to do, here's some advice.
You got it, Sam. The goal of a crisis comm plan is to help you be prepared and respond more quickly and effectively when you need to correct or handle a negative situation. And if you're successful, you're going to be viewed as responsive, truthful, and concerned about the audience served. So what you have to do to plan, just really simple, who are your stakeholders? Who are the audiences that will care the most about your crisis? You need to identify them, and then you need to identify ways to reach them amidst the crisis to inform them. Okay. Typically, if you're a big corporation, the public is one of your stakeholders, obviously. But there's internal stakeholders, there's employees, there's the media, there's, you know, if you're a publicly traded company, you've got that angle going on. So I tell people that you've got to identify those things, and then you've got to get a plan where you go through potential scenarios. And real quick, I know I'm running out the clock here as usual here, but I look for black swan events. I look for things that are totally crazy. How could this possibly happen? Because at the very least, you might be thinking, okay, Alex, I have clients like this. Alex, that's crazy. That would never happen. And I tell them, yeah, people never thought they would hijack jets and fly them into buildings either. And I don't mean that flippantly at all, but I just try to tell brands there, anything can happen. At the very least, in that process, you get the juices flowing and you start thinking of all the different ways something could spin out of control. What if you're a service company, you come and service air conditioners at somebody's house or something like that, and you're in and out during COVID. Okay. How many scenarios are there? Customer says they're fine. Your technician does it, comes back. Customer calls next day, says, I have COVID. Or customer calls next day and says, I didn't have COVID, but your technician must have given it to me. Think about all the ways that could get out of control. So you got to define your stakeholders, define your scenarios, and then you have to have answers on the shelf ready to plug and play, as I say, holding statements to buy you time, press release templates that you can plug information into, and a strategy for making things work. And the last thing I'll tell you is, once you get through a crisis, whether you fully survive it perfectly intact or whether you've had some damage, doesn't matter. Either way, you need to be able to still come back to the public at regular intervals to reassure them you're still on mission, you're credible, and you're doing everything you can to make sure that problem will not happen again.
I think that's good advice. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I think this year has definitely taught us to expect the unexpected, because it has been a wild one. But if people want to follow you, Alex, or keep up with what you're doing, how can they do that? And do you want to direct them to where they can find your podcast, PR After Hours?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Real quick, PR After Hours is twice weekly show. And I do a lot like Sam does, but he does it better. But it's a little kind of, it's as if you're in a lounge with me and we're having an interview with two PR people.
You like it? It feels like a fireside chat. It's very soothing.
That's what it is. I have people go, well, I don't drink. I'm like, no, you're not really drinking. We're not drinking during the interview. At least I don't claim to be, or it's like coffee, but you're just two people talking. I appreciate you like the vibe. So it's laid back and we have a great conversation, and that's available. Just go to prafterhours.com. That's the website. And then you can find all information about it. And if you're interested in information about how I can help your organization with their PR or crisis plan, alexgpr.com, real simple. And I'm on Twitter and all that stuff. But if you go to alexgpr.com or prafterhours.com, you'll find all those links.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thank you.